Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Kamastamavirvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 11. With a laugh full of deep significance, the worship of old Brahma then evolved by his own loveliness, which seemed to enjoy itself by itself, the hosts of Gandharvas and Apsaras. After that, Brahma gave up that shining and beloved form of moonlight. Vishvavasu and other Gandharvas gladly took possession of it. The glorious Brahma, so he's producing the living entity, then giving up that body, what that body creates, then those who he's created from that body, then take that, right? So the asuras take the night, the demigods the day, then the demons also then take the twilight, you know, the more lustful ones, and that, and then now he's produced the Gandharvas and Apsaras, and that's the moonlight. So that's why it's so pleasant and everything. So he's saying he's produced it from the his own loveliness. Right, so it's just that the Gandharva is upset. That's just nice, pleasant, right? You know. Yes.
Why would he need to give up his body for that?
I guess because you have to do something else. No. I mean, it's like, let's say you're thinking of something. Let's say thinking about what you're going to cook for lunch, right? And so it works, okay? But now if you want to study this, you kind of have to give up that body. You understand? Otherwise, if you're still thinking about lunch and then reading here, that somehow the two don't match very well. Vishvavasu and other Gandharvas... Okay. The glorious Brahma then next evolved from his sloth, the ghosts and fiends... But he closed his eyes when he saw them stand naked with their hair scattered. The ghosts and goblins took possession of the body thrown off in the form of yawning by Brahma, the creator of the living entities. That's why when you yawn, you're supposed to cover your mouth or do something. Because the ghosts and the fiends, that they've taken that body, so that's their cue. Yeah. Like that. This is also known as the sleep, which causes drooling. Right? So when somebody is sleeping and the drooling generally means that there's these wallas are around. Right? The hobgoblins and ghosts attack men who are impure, and their attack is spoken of as insanity. Recognizing himself to be full of desire and energy, the worshipful Brahma, the creator of living entities, evolved from his own invisible form, from his navel, the hosts of sadhyas and pitas. The pitas themselves took possession of the invisible body, the source of their existence. It is through the medium of this invisible body that those well-versed in the rituals offer oblations to the sadhyas and pitas in the form of their departed ancestors on the occasion of Shraddha. The pitas themselves took possession of the invisible body, the source of their existence. It is through the medium of this invisible body that those well versed in the rituals offer oblations. Didn't we just read that? So does that mean it's important? Okay. Then Brahma, by his ability to be hidden from vision, created the siddhas and vidyadharas and gave them that wonderful form of his known as the antardhana. One day, Brahma, the creator of living entities, beheld his own reflection in the water, and admiring himself, he evolved Kimpurushas, as well as Kinaras, out of that reflection.
Purushas, they look good?
They must, otherwise why would he? He's looking in the water and thinking, you know, not bad, so then they must be. I mean, it's like this.
They look monkeys?
Here, it's like this. Does someone who's youthful look good? Do horses look good? Okay, so if you had a youth with a horse head, they'd look good. Maybe you wouldn't want to marry your daughter to one, but hey, you know, but they'd look okay. Huh? Yeah? So, you know, so they must look okay. You know, but... Right. The Kimpurushas and Kinaras took possession of that shadowy form left by Brahma. So you have the invisible form that were taken by the forefathers and that. Then you have the shadowy form that's taken by the Kimpurushas and that. So everything has something, right? So all aspects of our life, for us, they're just part of the seeing. But on these subtler levels, they actually have substance. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it's much more subtle there. You know, like in this, you have Krishna, you have Radharani. Okay? So then that will create a shadow. So that shadow then is that next energy. Right? Is that energy that's on that side. And so that energy on that side, one will have appeared at the same time as Radharani. And will also look like Radharani, therefore known as Anuradha. Right? At the same time, because of the shadow, therefore in other manifestations of that personality, then that will be dark. Right? Does that make sense? Either as Nila or as Jamuna. Does this make sense? So it's subtle, but this has... Do we know who I'm talking about? Right? Does that make sense? Don't know. Vishaka Devi. Vishaka. The one standing next to Radharani. Okay. Right there. But like the other side, that she'll be an expansion because she won't be expanding that way because she's standing next to Krishna, so there can't be a shadow. Does that make sense? That is why they and their spouses sing his praises by recounting his exploits at every daybreak. So the Kimpurushas and that, then, because when do you get the longest shadows? Just when the sun comes up. So then at daybreak, that's when the Kimpurushas are singing his glories. So then you get very long shadows. Right? You know, so I guess they're not so comfortable to sing at high noon because there'll be no shadow, right? Once Brahma lay down with his body stretched at full length, he was very concerned that the work of creation had not proceeded apace. And in a sullen mood, he gave up that body too. O dear Vidura, the hair that dropped from that body transformed into snakes, and even while the body crawled along with its hands and feet contracted, there sprang from it ferocious serpents and nagas, with their hoods expanded. One day, Brahma, the self-born, right, so there must be some feeling of incompleteness in snakes, right? You know, I mean, they don't have hands and legs, so they must feel something's lacking here. You know, why does everybody else have hands and legs? They don't. You know, it's not that they don't notice these things. Like Prabhupada mentioned that dogs, when they see humans talking, they want to talk, right? And so therefore they make all kinds of, you know, they make their noises and stuff.
That's why snakes are angry.
Could be why they're angry, because things aren't complete, because he was sullen mood. So then, you know, when you're in a sullen mood, if anybody comes in and says, hi, hi, you know, it's not going to work out good. I say, it's not going to be pretty. One day, Brahma, the self-born, the first living creature, felt as if the object of his life had been accomplished. And at that time, he evolved from his mind the Manus, whom promote the welfare activities of this universe. So now you're getting the exact opposites. One body, he's feeling inadequate, you know, feeling something's wrong, not complete. And the other one, he's feeling satisfied and complete. So the one end, you get Manus, right, who are the progenitors of mankind and who uphold Dharma, by which everybody becomes elevated. Because everyone in the universe is benefited by the Manus. And no one's benefited by the snakes, right? Because they're always envious and that's like that. Unless, you know, you're talking about a pair of shoes or a handbag or something. But, you know, otherwise, then no one gets really any benefit by the snakes. Does that make sense? Yes.
Since in a human body we can have 400,000 level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. No, you can have 8 million also. The human, you have 400,000 inherent, but then you have the free will to act in any of them. Yeah. So that's how you get 8,400,000 species, because the human is acting as one of those, and that's where they go for the next birth. So if they act as a dog, they become a dog. Yes.
When we speak about the Manu and the snake and all this, it's another. It's included or it's more?
No, it's included.
It's included.
It's just, see, the 8,400,000 have already been generated in the primary creation, right? So they're already in Virat,
yes.
Right? In Hiranyagarbha in Virat.
Yes.
Then the point is now these have to manifest so that those forms are available for living entities according to their consciousness and karma to take those bodies,
yes.
Right? So this is all the... So his creation, he does that, then after that, then it runs for the rest of the day. Then in the morning, he has to recreate it again. Right? Yeah, so then... Yeah. So, in other words, envy is what makes you go in the opposite direction. And following the dharma as given by Manu, that takes you in the positive direction. Right, so these are the opposites. Following religious principles and envy. We can see is that they, you know, so they're... So envy is the only quality you can't engage in Krishna service. You can even engage jealousy. Right? You know, this person did this, you know, they did a particular service that says, I can do that also, and then you'll do a service, or I'll do it better. You know? Does that make sense? So jealousy can be engaged, but envy can't, because envy is destructive. Yes?
It means if we are engaged in devotional service, we are not envious?
It means that aspect that is engaged in devotional service is free from envy. You know, in other words, when you're sitting there cooking like that, that part's the devotional service. When you're looking out the window and making comments about, you know, somebody else's building and that, then that part's not the devotional service. So it both goes on once. That's the whole idea, is that sadhana means there can be a mix. As we progress in it, that mix gets less and less. So you'll have the maximum mix up to nishta, right? But when one starts the process, bhajana kriya, then that will be where then all these things that you never knew were there come out. You know, you never knew you could be so nasty, right? But it comes out because it's there. You know, it's been in there for so long, and then according to karma, you know, something else is there covering, or, you know what I'm saying? You have enough good karma that there's this nice veneer, right? You know, others' veneer is more thin, you know, so then, you know how you say? It's a nice veneer, but it's not thick skin, right? You know, so it's a delicate balance. Yeah. So then is by chanting and the sadhana, all these things come up. But they're on their way out. We may make the mistake that we think, oh, this is my nature. No, it's just on the way out. It's just that we have to be able to let it go when it goes out. Rather than, you know,
hey, this is fun, and then grab that, wow, I never knew I was so nasty, and then go down and sit down and start your blog, right? In India, there was a, what do you call it? The guys that write editorials? A journalist or, like that. So, and he had a famous editorial, I think it was in most papers. It was this guy, Khushwant Singh. He was a Punjabi. He was there way from back. I think he was involved in the whole, starting of the independence and everything. And so then his column was called With Malice Towards One and All. So, no, I mean, he didn't mind saying things about anyone, including himself, which is very rare for an Indian. Right? Westerners can joke on themselves, but Indians don't. Like that. So, he could do that. So most of the time his thing was about himself and the stupid things he ended up in, but at the same time it was a comment on everything else that, like that. So, like that. So this way then you could, as you realize your, then you can do something with it. But, So the point is that these are coming up, they're being cleared. And then that means by the time one gets to Nishta, that means that most of this has been cleared. So beginning, you'll start to become steady when it's 60%. But you're solid steady when it's 75%. Right? And so, therefore, then there's 25%, but 75% is the predominance. Right? It's just like this. If I make a subji, and it's 75% Karela, and 25% cauliflower, what's it going to taste like? Yeah, so that's why we don't worry so much about the mix, but we're aware of it because we shouldn't keep it. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes?
This question about envy, it sounds like it's a primordial thing of the living entity. So if somehow or other we became envious, in the past position, it must originate from somewhere. So where is it coming from?
It's the lack of, it's the opposite of prema. So at one end, you're in the tathasta position, so you have prema on one side and envy on the other.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's like if you're going to have, the small points aren't going to be the attractive, the main feature is going to be the, does that make sense?
So it exists only in the shadow. It doesn't exist in the spiritual world.
Yes, it doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Means if that envy comes up, you are looking across the material energy, across the viraja at the material energy. You're not actually, physically, you could say your body is in the spiritual world, but by consciousness you're not. So that's what actually defines where you are. Right, so if someone's in heaven or hell, is their consciousness? You know what I'm saying? Like someone is sitting, like I said, on top of K2 like that, freezing their fingers off and all that, and they're in ecstasy. Or someone else is in that 7-star hotel in Dubai, but they didn't get the room they wanted. They're in hell. So it's consciousness. It's not about where you're placed. Does that make sense? But there are standard things for human beings. So therefore, being on top of a frozen mountain, that's for polar bears. Right? They like it when it's cold. When it warms up, they get... We're up in Finland, up in Rovaniemi. Like that, that's Santa's hometown, right? So, but it's somehow another, even though it's in the Arctic Circle, it happened to be the hottest place in Europe for about 2 weeks. It was like 33 degrees up there, because it's, closer to the sun, but generally I don't know why, but it never gets hot, but that, it got hot. And so one of the things in the news was there was a group of reindeers, because of the heat, they went crazy. Because they wear this all year. This is what they wear in the summer. Right? What happened to the other one? Okay, that's the winter one. Yeah, it's cold, so they took a bag. That's a good point. Yeah. Have to watch as it warms up. Does the white one come? Yeah. So they went nuts, and they're running through the streets of downtown Rovaniemi, you know, and they're having to go out there and, you know, catch them and that. So like that. I'm sure if it was farther north, the polar bears would be doing the same thing. So, therefore, then, you know, such people will become polar bears or, you know, something in their next life. Does that make sense? So, if they stick to the natural human activities, or at least human mentality, that keeps them within the human form of life. But if they stray from that, then, you know, unfortunately the straying is greater than the staying. Because even of the 400,000, only a very few of them are civilized. So most of them aren't civilized. Like that. Yeah. Yes.
Can we say that envy is the symptom of the false ego? Does it only exist if you have
it? Yes, it would, because then you think the original false ego comes from I'm the controller and enjoyer. Mm-hmm. Then all the other three are based on that. I mean, that you can have without the modes of nature. You don't require the modes of nature to generate that. But having generated that, then the modes of nature will give you a specific false ego in the way of the mind, the intelligence, and your, you know, your body. Does that make sense? That's why the Mayavadis, the yogis, they can get rid of those three and come to the platform of liberation, but they don't get rid of the fourth. That's why they'll come back. That's why we say they're liberated, we'll say they're transcendentalists, but in other times you see the acharyas don't even talk about that as liberation because it's temporary. So then in that case, when we're talking about liberation and devotees, we mean going back to Godhead. So you've gotten rid of that fourth. It's actually the first, but from here you call that the fourth. Like that. So that's the Linga Sharir. And the other three are in that's the Karna Sharir. These other three are in the Linga Sharir. And that generates the Stula Sharir, the gross body. Right? So the gross body comes from the subtle body, which comes from the Karna Sharir. I'm the Purusha Bhav, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Does that make sense? So that's why this idea you can't fall from the spiritual world, the point is if you're on the platform of prema, you can't fall. But if you're not on prema, you can fall. So that's the point. We weren't on prema before, we fell, so now we should be more careful. And generally, we will be, because once you get, you know, once you, how you say, once burnt, twice shy, right? So you're not going to do it again. That's why when we come back to that liberated platform, we won't just be contented to stay there, we'll continue. That's why constantly is pointed out about that the happiness of Brahman, realization, or that platform, is not actually that great compared to prema. Why? Why would we have to mention it? Do we have Mayavadis coming out of our ears that it has to be brought? No, because when we get to that point, that's as high as we've ever been before. So we have to make sure that we're not happy there and stop there. So those things are for us. When it says Mayavadis, that's for the Mayavadis. But when it's just talking about the impersonal and the happiness is higher, that's for us. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Envy is beyond, it's not under the modes of nature, is what you've mentioned?
It means all qualities are there before the modes of nature. It's just a matter of the modes then run you through a particular regime of these qualities. Does that make sense? You know, like if you're a hamster, then you're cute and cuddly. And if you're a snake, then you're envious. Just the modes run you through those things. Like that. No? Should I have said guinea pig? Guinea pig? There's little things that are fuzzy like this, and when they walk, the front walks, and then the back comes. They're really weird. They're really weird. You know, 7-8-year-old girls like them. I don't know. When they get bigger, they don't seem to like them anymore.
Didn't get to it that yet.
Oh, it hasn't got to the guinea pig stage yet. Okay. Yeah, in South America they have them. They're like this big. They're another species. Same thing, but like that big. I don't know. I can't remember what they're called. But which one? I don't know what it's called, but it's they're monstrous. You know, so it's kind of like they got the biggest guinea pigs, but they got the smallest pigs. They got this pig that's like about this big. But, what to do? Yeah, that's just, it's kind of like what didn't fit anywhere else fits into South America and Australia, right? You know. You know, so therefore you end up with the platypus, the kangaroo, you know, pygmies with blowguns, you know, all that kind of jazz.
Well, she's the grossest part in the vigraha, the purpose-shaped form.
Of the?
The vigraha, the purpose-shaped form of your intention.
Yes, it means your mentality, then, because that's subtle, the mind, then it generates a particular interest in what, how to smell, touch, taste, you know, be active, you know, so all the senses, the knowledge acquiring and the working senses. So that mind has a mentality, therefore then the actual gross senses then group around that, and that gives you the particular body you have. So someone has a particular body because that's actually a manifestation of their gross, their subtle body. Right? Now you change the nature of the subtle body, then you change your body next life. Or even if you change it this life, a body that was not necessarily seeming so nice then becomes pleasant. You know? Kind of like a devotional Quasimodo or something. You know, you know, he's cute. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that that has. Otherwise, it's just, or you have the thing where, you know, one of the, what do you call it, cliches, is you have the supermodel, and they look fabulous on the camera, but behind the scenes, you don't get anything nastier. Because the subtle body actually isn't very nice. Right? But they have the karma that they still have a nice gross body. Does that make sense? But then you also get, you know, means that's your also your Disney ideal, is that where you have both. You know, the subtle body is very nice, the gross body is very nice. You know, but I think they only have about 8 of them.
Yeah.
You know, so since they've been going since the 30s, which is, you know, almost 90 years now, they've only been able to put together about, you know, 6 or 8 of them. So, yeah. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in purport to verse 49, when Brahma desired to create a couple and became blissful, thinking that his creation was complete, the Manus appeared and took the form of humans for completing the creation. Right, so you had all these other species in that, but you didn't have humans, because humans are the one that's going to generate sacrifice, that's going to be the support of the whole universe. This is explained in 2 verses. Though Manus are mentioned here, at this time only Swayambhuva Manu became visible. Others became visible at the appropriate time. The creation of the Manus took place last, ante. Therefore, the creation of the sages, which will be described after this, actually took place before the creation of Manu. In the 10th, 12th, and 20th chapters, sometimes the events are in proper sequence, and sometimes some elements are omitted or put in a different order. Because right? When you're explaining something so technical, you just take main points, and according to the question. Right? So then, if the question is different, you may take the different main points, or some are the same, some are different. So it appears that there's so much difference, but it's still one thing. And then the question may answer one thing first and then go back to something else. So sometimes it appears that the order is different. Right? Yes.
So what is the order actually?
So he's saying here, ante, the Manus are last. Sages are before. So the Prajapatis, the sages, all these, they're all before.
Then Manu, then humans.
Yes. Well, humans come from Manu. So Manu's expansions will get the humans.
Can Manus be technically humans? Humans?
Yeah, he mentioned here that they are humans. Manus appeared and took the form of humans for completing the creation. You know, just they're a little bit more superhumans, but they're actually humans. So they have the same, you know, so they won't have mystic powers and stuff like that, like the demigods. So they'll be like us, just they live a touch longer.
And sages?
Sages. They're within the 400,000, but its point is it's the humans, meaning humans of this place. Because that's what you're trying to get down to. Because otherwise, all the others, they are in human form, but they have more position and power and everything. So Manu and that does, but then from him will come down and get us. Right? And then after Manus, then you hear of, then within that society, then the kings. Right? We're not hearing so much now, it's going a little slower now, but at times you get it where it'll just go through verses of just lists of kings and all that. Because they're the last in the discussion, but in manifestation of species, then human is last. Because it completes the scene, because the human is how you can get out of here. While the others are, according to your karma, how you are here. Does that make sense? Right, because you're going through these chapters, so it's explaining something, and then going back and explaining again, and going back and explaining again. So one shouldn't think that taking all that together is the chronology. No, all it is each time you're explaining the chronology, but you're bringing out different important points according to what was the discussion. The proper sequence of the creation is as follows. First creation of animals with five joints, then the creation of trees and plants, then the creation of snakes, then the creation of cows and buffaloes, then the creation of yakshas, rakshasas, asuras, kinars, kimpurushas, then the creation of the kumaras, then the creation of the humans. Finally, the manus were created. All the forms previously created increased through the forms of male and female. So these first ones are the ones that are first created. Then from there, everything had to be created within their species of male, within male and female. Because that we'll see is the question that will come up. Is that before this, it's just Brahma's creating from his subtle bodies. Then he says, okay, now what happens in the creation for those who are expanding the creation through male and female? Oh, that's in this chapter. Okay, so then that's the whole idea is that, okay, now what happened after that? Because you had that Brahma's recreation here, but you have to start with something, right? And then from there, you got everything else. That's why when the Vedic concept, what came first, the chicken or the egg, first you had the chicken, right? Then after you had the chicken, then male and female chickens produced eggs that then produced the chickens from then on. But you had to have an original chicken to start the whole process. Does that make sense? Mm. No? Yeah, so it's not a big problem for us. You know, all these esoteric questions. You know. Yes?
So Brahma's creation ends basically when he creates Manus and then everything expands on its own.
Yes, then it just expands on its own. Because then it's basically maintenance. But he's created all the facilities, then after that it goes on.
But then when he goes to sleep, and then he wakes up, he creates the species, but all the planetary system and everything exists already.
Yeah, but they have to be somehow or another, you know, dragged out of the water and, you know, dried off. And yeah, so everything has to be put in place again. Because it's destroyed, so he puts it together, but it's not like the first day where you have to create everything from scratch. Mm-hmm. Like that. But so that's why I said the secondary creation is also called recreation, because secondary creation on that level will be done once, but the recreation is done every day, every morning, but even during the day some things have to be redone. You know, the manus, because they change 14 times a day, so there's plenty to do. So he's busy. So if you wonder what he does all day, you know, that's what he's... The self-possessed creator gave them his own human form. On seeing the Manus, those who had been created earlier, the demigods, the Gandharvas, and so on, applauded Brahma, the Lord of the universe. They prayed, O creator of the universe, we are glad. What you have produced is well done. Since ritualistic acts have now been established soundly in this human form, we shall all share the sacrificial oblations. So they're all happy, right? Because now the humans will perform the sacrifice. By that, it will maintain the universe, right? Because everybody will get a share in that sacrifice. Srila Prabhupada, yes.
It means that Brahma, he has the same, the human being has the same form as Brahma.
Means his form means, yeah, but without the extra heads.
Yes, exactly.
But it's the form is there, but it's still, because all these would fit within the 400,000. Right? So Brahma would be one of the 400,000. Does that make sense? So all these different categories would be part of that. But that's only a few of them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like that, you know. You know, so that, you know, because then you get the uncivilized. You know, you get the Moa Moas that were eaten by the Maoris, who were then, you know, displaced by the, you know, English. You know, like that. So each one, you know, harasses the other. So, yeah. Srila Prabhupada explains, all the living entities created by Brahma are conditioned souls and are inclined to lord it over material nature. The purpose of sacrificial rituals is to revive, gradually, the spiritual realization of the living entities. That is the beginning of life within this universe. These sacrificial rituals, however, are intended to please the Supreme Lord. Unless one pleases the Supreme Lord, or unless one is Krishna conscious, one cannot be happy either in material enjoyment or in spiritual realization. Right? So they're happy because they're all conditioned, and the only way to get beyond that conditioning is through sacrifice. Right? And then by that, then you can gradually revive your spiritual consciousness. And then Prabhupada, so therefore they're applauding Brahma's effort here. And then Prabhupada's making the point is that this is going to have meaning in connection to the Lord. So when sacrifice is done in connection with Vishnu, then it's actually real purpose, the sacrifice is fulfilled. Then one can be happy both in one's spiritual and material endeavor. But if one's not doing sacrifice, even materially, one is not satisfied. Right? Yes?
I always wondered, like, how can the demigods enjoy the simple things that humans offer them, like barley and sesame seeds and ghee? They have much higher standard of food and enjoyment. So how can they, like, sometimes they fight over this sacrificial share and all that. So why are they so, how can they enjoy the simple sacrifice and the offerings that are made in the sacrifice? And they enjoy much higher things.
So, okay, if barley is simple, what's something more elaborate in the way of food?
Pasta. Even we make so many nice dishes, so we are just simply offering barley and sesame seeds into the fire, and I won't probably enjoy that. So how can the demigod enjoy that?
So you're thinking if you offered a package of chips or something, that would be a better offering, or
no halwa or nice, nice preparations. You make so many.
And what do you make halwa out of?
Wheat flour or whatever.
Where are you from?
Rajasthan.
And you speak?
Hindi.
So you've never heard of a thing called suji?
Suji, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So now, if I give suji and sugar and ghee, right, to a qualified cook, are they happy?
Yeah.
If I give it to you, you're not happy. Because either your mom or wife has to cook it. But if I give it to a cook, they're happy. You know what I'm saying? If I come along and give you a little package of Iranian saffron, You don't care. You just hand it to your wife. She's in ecstasy. You understand? So therefore, being on a higher level, they actually appreciate real things. Right? Does that make sense? You're not tossing hard drives into the fire or something. Right? Because, you know, what do they need a hard drive for? Right? We're the one with no brains, we need a hard drive. They have brains, they don't need a hard drive. Right? They have crystal airplanes, they don't need a Mercedes. Right? You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, using your perspective to understand those who are higher means you use it as something to work from. But the thing is your, how you say? You have to understand that perspectives may be different. We may not have the highest perspective. Does that make sense?
Yeah?
Okay.
Is Brahma, he's part of the 400,000 species of humans?
Would have to be. It means he won't be part of the 8 million, you know, non-human species. Right? So what we're saying is 400,000 includes all the human forms throughout the universe. Right? And then, but, you know, only some of them are civilized. Right? Is that, yeah. So then there's a lot that aren't. So civilized means they follow the Vedic culture. So if their natural position is following the Vedic culture, they're civilized. If their natural position is not following the Vedic culture, they're not civilized. But all human forms of life can take up Krishna consciousness and become civilized. That's the thing. Just their natural tendency may not be, but they can. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Human forms can, like, King Purushas. They have humans, but they're considered human.
They're that, but they'll be considered within the uncivilized. Uncivilized, but that they follow the Vedic culture, but they'll consider themselves forest people because they live out in the forest. You know, you got a horse head, better live out in the forest. You know, unless you're showing up at, you know, Halloween or a masquerade party, it probably wouldn't go down so well. Does that make sense? You know, or at least don't put him in the front row, you know, at the presidential dinner. You know, put him in the back. Otherwise, he won't be able to give his lect speech. Right? You know, like that. You know, a guy sitting there in his Armani suit with a horse head. You know, I mean, his hair is nicely combed. Don't yeah, like that. You know. Yeah, the ponytail in the back. Yeah, like that. But think about it. You could have a mohawk, right? But and you wouldn't have to get a haircut. Yeah. So it would have its advantages. Does that work? Yeah? Okay. Very good. Okay. All the living entities... we just read that. Having equipped himself with austere penance, adoration, mental concentration, and absorption in devotion, accompanied by dispassion and having controlled his senses, Brahma, the self-born living creature, evolved great sages as his beloved sons. Right? So this is what he's meaning. Is now it talks about this, but they were before the Manus, because the Manus are the last. To each one of these sons, the unborn creator of the universe gave a part of his own body, which was characterized by deep meditation, mental concentration, supernatural power, austerity, adoration, and renunciation. 52-53, Srila Prabhupada concludes, spiritual realization cannot be attained by materialistic persons. For those who are addicted to sense enjoyment, spiritual realization is not possible. Because you're absorbed in the senses, so how you'll be absorbed in thinking of the Lord? That's all. It's just, it's simple. Like that. So if you think of the Lord, you're absorbed there. You're not thinking of the Lord, you're not. So the idea of sadhana is you put yourself in situations and activities that will make you think of the Lord.
And then gradually, as that increases, the piety from that increases, the natural tendency is to be more involved in that. Right? So if you're doing these activities in good association, the inspiration is to become better. So then you do, until that becomes stable, until that's what you always do. Then, once you're stable, now it's the quality of what you're doing. That becomes deeper and deeper. Right? So it says, but if you're in bad association, even if you're doing good activities, the tendency is to give up those activities, right? Or to not be so serious about it, right? So that's why then sense enjoyment, it's not possible, right? We can say, oh, somebody's doing this, so it's not possible for them to be a devotee. It means while they're doing that, it's not possible. But if when they're not doing that, because they don't do that all day, you know what I'm saying? So then it's possible. You're like, they're sitting and talking gossip. So you say, it's not possible for them to be devotees, but are they talking gossip 24/7? So at least at some point, they're sleeping and not gossiping, right? And if they're in the Dham, that sleeping is equivalent to offering dandavats. So they're making advancements. Okay? No? Right? So everybody's benefited, right? In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that those who are too attached to seeking material possessions and material enjoyment cannot reach yoga samadhi, absorption in Krishna consciousness. So, too attached, that means one's performing one's duties, and then whatever is the goals that you want, then those, you know, you're making that endeavor. But if you're too attached to it, that will create the problem. If you're not too attached, it's just part of the duty, therefore you're making your endeavor, then that's fine. Right? So the point is, when the attachment becomes greater than your ability to see its connection to Krishna, that's where it's a problem. So you may be attached, but you can connect it to Krishna, that's workable. And then from that, gradually, the attachment would become less, and so you'll be able to perform that activity without attachment. Right? And so naturally, if it is your duty, you'll continue it. If it's not your duty, you would naturally drop it. Right? So then the question on what do I do and not do in Krishna consciousness if I'm absorbed in Krishna, as I become Krishna conscious, it's a matter of what things are your duty. So now we'll do things that are duty and things that are not because of attachment. Right? Does that make sense? But as we become purified, we give up that attachment, then we'll just maintain those things that are duty. That's why Krishna is constantly saying, perform your duty. Right? Because otherwise, then the tendency will be when we give up attachment, we'll give up everything. But perform your duty with knowledge, right? With detachment, you know, to please Krishna. Right? Because we can think of Krishna, but not be doing it to please Krishna. Because that's the Brahman and Paramatma level. Is that you can be absorbed in the Lord, but not actually be doing it to please Krishna as a person. Right, so ultimately, it's brought to that level. But if you connect it to Krishna, then whether it's your duty or not, you will get purified. But as time goes and you become purified, then you'll start to stick to just doing what is your duty. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we don't have to change what someone's doing. We simply have to change the mentality. Then it will automatically adjust with time. Does that make sense? Is something? No. Okay. Is that? So the emphasis isn't on that. The emphasis is on having knowledge and being Krishna conscious. Then, you know, we point out that it's to please Krishna. So that means what? It's not to please ourselves. So that means the attachment has to be given up. So the process works very smoothly. Propaganda that one can enjoy this life materially and at the same time spiritually advance is simply bogus. So, in other words, you can't be enjoying life, and that means you're doing devotional service at the facilities and that comes, you'll be happy. But it's not about being happy by those facilities, it's about doing devotional service. You understand? So if the consciousness switches to it's about the facility, you won't be Krishna conscious. If you're being Krishna conscious,
then according to whatever the position, facility may come. But it's not about the facility. Does that make sense? Like, if the businessman is thinking, I am doing this to get money, he won't be actually doing business. Right? When he's thinking, this is the process of economics and focusing on that process, then he'll get results, because you can't guarantee what results you get. So you can only focus on the endeavor that generates results. You understand? So if you're attached to the result, you can't actually get the result. But if you make the endeavor to do what you're supposed to do in economics, then result will come. Because you may make do something small, it turns out big. You always hear about business endeavors where somebody from their garage did something small and it turns into a billion-dollar business. And then you hear of others, they invest hundreds of millions and it bombs. Right? So that's the whole thing, is you can only make the endeavor. So those who are successful are focusing on the endeavor. They know what result is there, but they're just seeing that the endeavor is going in the right direction. But as soon as you're thinking about the result, then where's the connection? I'm here, result is there. There's a gap. Right? But if I'm here and performing the activity here, that activity will gradually get to the result. Does that make sense? So that's why you can't have both at once. But that doesn't mean that you don't have facility. It just means it can't be about the facility. It has to be about Krishna. Right, you'd have to admit Yudhishthira Maharaj had facility, right? That would, you know, you couldn't argue that he didn't. It'd be a hard case to win, right? You know. So, but it comes down to is, but it wasn't about the facility. It was about this is how they could do. Now, what kind of service do they like to offer to Krishna? Yeah. So therefore, Krishna comes to visit. They can give him the royal facility. So for them, that's why it's worthwhile having all that facility. Because Krishna may come and visit. Does that make sense? Yeah, but like for Vidura, he had it very simple. And he offered that to Krishna, and Krishna accepts that. So according to the nature of the individual, they have their service. So you're not saying Vidura is as good, Yudhishthira is bad. No, you say Vidura is as good, Duryodhana is as bad. Because Duryodhana's facility was only political, it wasn't devotional. While Vidura, that's devotional. And then more extreme is that Brahmin who had nothing but a stack of bananas, yes, and he's feeding Krishna the bananas, picking the bananas, peeling them, throwing the banana and giving Krishna the peel, and Krishna's eating it. Right? Because of the devotion. Right? So that's the whole point, is you perform your duties according to your nature, and whatever facilities one is supposed to have will be generated from that. Does that make sense? So a guy who's a panwala will do his duty, and he'll make enough to, get by. Does that make sense? Some other businessman, he does the same amount of endeavor, possibly even less, and he's making hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands sometimes. Right? So in other words, one engages one's nature, and then accordingly one gets results. So it's not about the results, it's about engaging the nature. That's what the whole point is. The manus, it's about sacrifice, performing one's duties. Right? And doing that to please Krishna, then accordingly you'll get whatever you're supposed to get. Right? Because I focus on it doesn't mean I'll get more. Does that make sense? Right? Is that, let's say I am cooking. Like, right? I'm cooking some cauliflower sabji. Now, if I'm thinking of Krishna, when I finish cooking, what will I have? Okay, now if I'm not thinking of Krishna, I'm just thinking I want to eat, what will I have? Right? It doesn't change. But the quality of the consciousness and what is the effect you'll get has changed. You'll end up with the same sabji. But one, you'll become Krishna conscious and please Krishna. The other one, you won't. You won't even really satisfy yourself. Does that make sense? Do we get the thing? Because otherwise it may be thought, it says, this idea you can have both is bogus. And they think, so that means we won't have any facility. No, you have facility. Whatever is generated naturally by your endeavor. But it's not about that. It's about... Does that make sense?
Yes.
Maharaj would like to ask about duties.
Duties. Okay.
If we consider a woman, like a wife, if she has, I don't know, like different varna from husband, she should follow his varna or to engage herself in the duties of her varna or family.
I understand. I'm just wondering why you have that situation.
So my wife is actually asking me. She's not here. She's in Europe. But she asked me to ask you this question.
The thing is whatever is the situation that the husband provides, because that's where the occupation is, therefore, then that's the duty she'll perform. Does that make sense? Now, when you're talking about ashram, the duties don't change for the different varnas. It's not like Kshatriya has an ashram, Vaishyas have an ashram, Brahmas have an ashram. There's only Brahminical ashram. So in ashram, the duties that the women perform are always Brahminical. So it's occupational. So the point is if the husband's a Brahmin, then he brings in a certain amount of facilities. Right? So that's what she has to be comfortable with. Right? If you have a Brahmin who is studying the scriptures and lives by begging, she can't expect a palace just because she's from a Kshatriya family. She's going to have a hut. That's it. Okay? Does that make sense? So that's how it's going to work. So if she's just... So within the house and the relationship, it doesn't change. It just means the facility changes. Now, how they're going to think, Brahman's going to be naturally a little bit more... philosophical about the things. The Kshatriyas, there'll be the stronger emotions. The Vaishyas, it'll be more about, what's the gain, what's the profit. The Shudras, it'll be more about the emotional expressions and all those kind of things. You understand? So the point is since that's there, then the husband's business to understand that and try to take care of that. You know what I'm saying? Why I stopped in the beginning... Okay, it says your wife asked you to ask it. Okay, that's okay. Most of the time, the men ask these things about the women's duties. But the point is the women's duties become proper when the men perform their duties, and men never ask that question. Okay? Does that make sense? Now, if she has a job, then she should perform that job according to her nature. Does that make sense?
She can do it separately from her husband. His job.
Means you guys sit at the same desk or something, share the same keyboard.
No, I think
she gets her own keyboard, but you have one monitor. You know, so you type something and she erases it. You understand? Means you have your job, she has her job. You know what I'm saying? Let's say the guy is an office worker, so he does that. But she's a doctor, so she does according to that. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, but at home it doesn't change. There is no ashram, there's one ashram, so there's no difference. It's just what facilities and environment and social status you're staying in. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
We discussed previously endeavor. So what's the difference between endeavor and over-endeavor? Because Srila Prabhupada and Goswami, they always...
Over-endeavor means you're performing your duties within the natural capacity. To say, like Prabhupada says, work. You should, 8 hours a day for an occupation, and that's a proper amount. More than that, it's going to cut out of your family time and your sadhana. So over-endeavor would be, 16, I say doing the German two jobs a day and, 16 hours of the Japanese kind of, that's over-endeavor. Yeah. Means they're known for being industrious and having facility, but they're not known for, when you think of perfect family life, examples aren't taken from Japan or from Germany. Like that, But being industrious and working hard and getting money and developing... Then you take their example. Does that make sense? So that's over-endeavor. So what is your duty? You fix within that, you do that. Like always just endeavoring the family, taking care, neglecting the business, neglecting sadhana, that's over-endeavor. or your sadhana, and then you're not taking care of the family or taking care of anything else, that's over-endeavor. So when they're balanced, then that's proper. Does that make sense? So you work 8 hours, you sleep a certain amount of time. Now what's left, that has to be divided between your sadhana and family. Yeah? That's how it works. So that means what your endeavor in that much, whatever you get from that, that's what you live with. Right? You may have a goal that you want, but it still has to fit within that time. Does that make sense? You know, one may complain, no, but that's not fair. But anything works like that. How does a game work? It works within a time. However many points you get in that much time, then you win. It's not that, you know, oh, but if we had gotten an extra 2 hours, you know, we could have won. You know. You know, it says. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just, because the point is for the same amount of work, then you're getting from the guy just scraping by to the guy who's got so much money he doesn't know what to do with it. But they're putting in the same amount of time. You know? It's not that these billionaires are working 37 hours a day. You know? No, they're working the same amount. Is that? Yeah. Yes. The son-in-law in
Finland. I'm 16 right now.
I couldn't catch. It sounded to me like my son-in-law in Finland. That's what I heard.
I'm sorry. I'm 16-year-old son, and he has this question.
Oh, I'm 16-year-old son. Okay. You have a 16-year-old son.
Yes. Ma'am.
And he's not in Finland.
Correct.
Not in Finland. Okay. Just trying to get this all straight. So he's not working for Nokia.
No.
Okay. So they were taken over by Motorola, so he dropped that job. Okay.
I guess I've not been able to respond to his question. He's always asking this question about how, you know, like we hear about how the Varnashram system is organized around guna and karma. But for a woman, if she's the wife of a brahmana, and we understand that a brahmana's duties are teaching and, you know, yajna and all that, but we still see that a brahmana's wife would still be engaged in womanly duties. So if she has a propensity for teaching, then would the Vedic system provide an outlet or a place for her to express that natural propensity? Or would her duties be determined by her birth as being a woman and not as much by her guna and karma?
I see. So, how you say? This is what you're already expecting a particular answer because how you presented it, you've already biased the jury in a particular way.
Question, because he's growing up, he's always asking me that, and I give him answers according to my own understanding. But
he's worried about him being a wife and whether he should perform the duties or.
I think it's more ideological for him rather than, you know.
Okay, so it's just a point of interest.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, otherwise I was going to ask next, does he live in San Francisco?
D.C.
Okay. So, the point is when you're functioning, as we mentioned with Prabhu's question, when you're functioning in the house, then what do you do? Does that make sense? Okay, let us say the husband, he's doesn't know how to cook, and he's determining what you're going to eat. Is that going to work out for the woman? No, because the man can eat exactly the same thing every day for the rest of his life and be happy. Does that make sense? So therefore, then you say, oh, but the woman has to cook. No, the woman wants to cook because she wants to control what she eats. The woman needs variety, therefore she'll generate variety. You understand? And how will the guy live in the house? He could have a living room with a couch and a television and a remote, and he's good. You know, so if you want curtains, you want those nice little pillows, you want all the little tchotchkes around the house, that the woman has to do. You can't expect the man is going to do that. No, he's not going to do that. That's why these high-profile professional women, they have servants who do it for them because they don't want to do it, and the man is not about to do it. So, does that make sense? Okay, so nothing changes. Okay? So all it is, as we said, depending upon, you know, the financial, that's how you're going to be. And then that's going to be the quality. The husband is brahminical, he's going to be clean. Husband's not brahminical, he may or may not be clean. And that's the way it is. You don't like it, you can adjust it a little bit, but you can't adjust it a whole lot. Right? You know, if you don't like that, don't marry someone who's not of the same nature. Okay? It's just the way it is. I'm still talking. Okay. So then, now, if it's required that she needs to be doing some work, then she would do it according to her nature. Otherwise, then there's this thing called children. And you have to train them. Right? Now, if you go to work as a teaching job, right? Now, most women will get a teaching job most likely within below seventh grade, right? A few above that and very few above that, right? Okay, why? Because below that, if they're below 12, actually, if they're 10 and below, you can actually manage them. From 11 and above, very difficult to manage, okay? So it's nice, it's pleasant. Women like being with kids, so here you're with a whole room full of them. Okay, now they come at 9 o'clock, they go at 3, in that there's lunch, there's recesses and that, how much time are you going to put in? So the 6 hours, you may put in about 4. Okay, so that means 4 hours, 5 days a week, take out, you know, 3 months in the summer, take out Christmas and all that, take out Easter. So you get 180 days, so half the year, you are dealing with kids, training them 4 hours a day. Okay? Now, you calculate it. As a mom, you're dealing basically 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So then the teaching propensity won't be engaged? It's actually more engaged than if she had a job as a teacher. Right? Because ultimately, how much can you tell the kid in your class? You know, and then that's the kid. Then you have the husband. He needs to be domesticated, so all the training that's there, right? Does that make sense? Right? So in other words, with one, you're taking raw material and trying to make it human. And the other one, then you're actually producing, you know, like that. So it's plenty of teaching opportunities. Does that make sense? Okay.
This wife. Some job. She gets married from there.
Yes.
So then, or maybe sometimes she gets her money from there and from other sources.
Right.
So whom then this money belongs? To her or to both of them? Or how?
How's it supposed to work? Whose money is it? Okay, if she's getting it from parents, friends, any other source, it is her money, and that's end of discussion. The men have zero say in how it's... In, I mean, she shouldn't be wasting money on that, but that they have no idea. They can't make their own plans with her money. Nothing. It can't be touched. That's her money. Now, if she's working under... if she's living with the husband, then whatever she makes there, that's then part of the family money. That's not her money. Does that make sense? Because she's then under dependent. Just like the son who's living with the father, whatever money he generates technically is the father's. But now if she's not under the parents and not under a husband, whatever she generates is hers. But whatever she comes to the table with, that's her money. So he wants to buy the house, he wants to get the car, that he has to generate. He can't think her money is going to do that. You understand? But the tradition is, even if it's the family money, the man's made the money, or she's made the money, and once it's worked out what goes where, you know, a matter of what savings and what's for maintenance and that, then the spending of it, that she does, whether she's generated it or he's generated it. Okay? Does that make sense? Just like what's for dinner. Like that. You know what I said? You can put in your request, and if you've been a good boy, you may get it, but she's the one that makes the decision. Okay? Right. So in other words, for all this surrender, you might as well practice applying that to the Lord, you know, and then get some eternal benefit. Right? Okay? Yes.
You said that it's the wife's prerogative to spend the money?
She's the one in control of the money. That means if she spends it well, then things go nice. But if she spends it badly and he has to step in, then that's generally considered a bit insulting.
So you know. Is the fact that she's supposed to collect the household fare from the Elia, quote unquote, from Narda Muni's?
Why? Do you want him to buy the couch or you to buy the couch?
Oh, definitely the woman.
Yeah, so then that's what we're saying. So therefore, all the things in the house, so she has to plan it. Like, because they're also mentioning the point is that you buy things when they're cheap and store them. You know? You get things that are a deal and things like that. And then you have all that. So the woman manages the money. Because it's that whole household scene that's being maintained. He generates the money, but then she has to see that it's carefully spent. But you also have to save. So if there's not money saved, that's her fault. Does that make sense? So in other words, if for what money you have for maintenance, that shouldn't be what you spend. Something should always be put away. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Cool. About Brahmins,
what about Brahmins?
Yeah, they should spend the same day.
The Brahmins should spend the same.
They don't keep for the future.
Brahmins don't keep for future.
It's not interesting.
It's one of the ways that a Brahmin can function. But then you have to have that husband and wife both are from that kind of background. So in other words, if the wife and the husband, they're both from Brahmin families that don't keep for tomorrow, they'll be happy because that's how they've done. But if she's from a family that does soma yajnas, so you have to have 3 years stock of food, then she won't appreciate that you don't have for tomorrow. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's why equal nature. It's not, oh, love will do everything. Love will get you together, but it won't maintain you because love is passion. It generates. Goodness is maintenance. Right? So one's feeling that love and that feeling that eternity and that feeling that eternity will maintain. But that eternity is only the situation. It's not the nature of maintenance. That's why it's not recommended that the basis of the relationship is just only the attraction based on love. There has to be, the nature has to work. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, the teenage girl loves the idea of one of those big monster German, some kind of utility truck. But now whether she can drive it or not is another thing. You know what I'm saying? Yes? No? Doesn't make sense. It's too big. She can't reach the pedals. You know, it's 12 gears to get to 30 kilometers an hour. You know, you can't find a parking space. Does that make sense? So the whole point is it must be that it matches the nature. You may want the world, but it has to actually be what's going to work. So you have to know what works. If you don't know that, and it's just if you know what works and you have love, bingo. But if you only have love and don't know what works, or worse, you're just desperate and don't know what works, then you really got problems. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking about a science here. a real science that works. One can say, oh, but all this is theoretical. But in India, and especially like in Asia, they never had any problems with families falling apart. This is a new thing. As you introduce the Western culture, then it's like divorce is kind of like a Western thing to do. Not that they need to. It's just, you know, they could tolerate. But it's just the thing to do. All your friends are doing, so you're doing it. You know what I'm saying? It's the fashion. It's not the... Does that make sense? Sure? Okay.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, we see here it's a sarga, envy sarga.
Yes.
But then other religious scriptures, it seems like they describe only this sarga, no sarga in there.
No.
Not much.
They don't understand. I mean, you could probably say the first page and the third of Genesis is sarga.
Yes.
But then after that, you don't really hear anything of Visarga. You just hear how somehow or another three brothers don't get along. You know, but there had to be a Visarga. Otherwise, who did they marry? Right? There's these brothers are generated, and there are no other living entities. But their sons, they marry the local village girls. That means the village girls then must have had families. There must have been a whole economic scene and everything like that. So in other words, sad to say, is those first boys had to marry Goy. So that's why there were no other living entities, because there were no other Jews like that. But, you know, you have to be practical. And so then... But I'm sure they converted, because after that, then it went on nicely. So. Yeah, no, they don't. They don't. Somehow or another, God's there. At best, they'll use the Old Testament. Like, and the Protestants don't really even put any emphasis at all. Somehow or another, it all happened. And then there's speculation, does God still have control? Did he lose control? You know, how much control does the devil have? And all that kind of jazz. Got too religious or something? Yeah. Okay.
Just got what you want.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Wife is there.
Yeah, wife is there. Okay. So maybe he just came to ask that question.
It's okay.
Yeah. Is that so? No, but no, they don't. This idea and even the subtleties of both, they wouldn't know.
And it's just enough for Kali Yuga. It's kind of running and everybody's happy.
Yeah, that's all. That's all the more that has to be explained. That's why technically this whole point with Adam and Eve is only to explain the generation of Mleches to run Kali Yuga. So they don't get into the whole human scene that's already going on, that may be following the Vedic culture. Because for Kali, it's not about the Vedic culture, it's about those who don't follow it. Right? So therefore, you're going to start with those who generated that. You know, does that make sense? You know, like in America, it's about the founding fathers showed up on their, you know, whatever it is, the Plymouth, or ended up on Plymouth Rock, something to do with Plymouth. They ended up there and, you know, spent the winter and died, you know. And then the next group came along, and then somehow or another, after, you know, worked out something with the Indians, because the Indians were kind to them. Of course, that was, you know, no good turn goes unpunished, you know, like that. You know, shared their turkeys with them and everything, and then they took over the country, you know. So whatever it is. So, you know, it all went on like that. But you don't hear about anything else. You're studying. So the important thing is how that generated, you know, the Boston Tea Party and stuff like that. You know, it's just, you know, a bunch of rebels go in, throw the tea off the boat, and somehow or another that's glorious, right? Like that. You know, it's just like if what's his name? Who's the Guy Fawkes had been successful, then he would have been the savior of the day. So Guy Fawkes Day would have been a festival of, you know, how, you know, truth and liberty had taken over. But instead, Guy Fawkes is the bad guy because they caught him, and the other guys won. Does that make sense? So it's always whoever, you know, you could imagine if the Germans had won, world history would have been very different, you know? Like that. So that's the whole thing, is that you just take it from the point that's important to you. So because you're dealing with Kali Yuga, the important history is how you made the Malechas to start Kali Yuga. Because otherwise, all these kings are there, everything's going on nicely, it's all still Vedic culture. And very hard to you know, make the four, you know, illicit, you know, principles the culture. Because only Malechas will accept that as culture. So therefore, you have to generate Malechas. Therefore, Adam and Eve. So they can't get into all those other things because then that points that there must be something a lot higher than just being good, going to heaven, and, you know, hanging out with your family eternally. And no one even talks about that much. You know, they say, I'll meet you there. They don't say, we'll be happy there. Yeah.
And then the question comes, well, what about the mother-in-law, whether she is a family or not?
Yeah, that's the whole thing, yeah, because you'll be with her eternally also. Right? It's not well thought out, right? Yeah, and then another point to think about. Just this is you know, very much a tangent. Okay, there's you know, you got your green embroidered couches, okay, and what are we up to now in virgins?
63.
Okay, how do they fit? How many can sit on one couch? You know, so you just have a bunch of couches and everyone's sitting around. What does that do for you? You know what I'm saying? Well. You know, and then who has to cook dinner, take care of that, you know, I mean, and then you can imagine all the clothes for them, and you got to provide all that, you know, so it's just, you know, this is not well thought out. Right? Does that make sense? Let's say 250 saris times 63. That's a lot of saris. And then it's not only that, it's that many saris, that, and then you can't just get one sari, you have to get 63. And then to find 63 that are different and unique... You know, you'd have to be going all over India to be able to get that. So that's the point. They haven't thought these things out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, it's not. That's the problem, is they don't really have any theology. And because of that, therefore there's so much... there's so much breakup in these religious institutions because they don't know enough philosophy to actually establish Siddhanta. You know, it's just like between all the different Christian groups like that, and you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of them, the main difference is how much God is Jesus. That really makes the difference. Or what particular ritual is to be used to worship him. You know, but so there isn't any absolute that this is the ritual and this is his position. And if there's that, then you have very, very limited. You know, then it's more flavor. You know, like in the Vaishnava community, where do you want to go in the spiritual world? That makes the difference in flavor. But the principles it's based on are all the same. So we can discuss philosophy with any of them and actually have the same point. It's only when you get into the finer, then you'll have fine. Is that so? Yeah. Okay. Good. Varna is what you do to make money. How you maintain yourself is your varna. Ashram is your lifestyle. You have to put it all together. You know, you have guna and karma, right? So you're going to have your nature, but you're going to have your character, right? You have your guna is your karma is your skills, your guna is your nature. Does that make sense? So that's why you consider both. Just like we were saying, if a man is doing an occupation, it's about the skill of the occupation, and so he's trying to perfect that skill. Right, the woman is doing the same occupation. It's her occupation. That's why she's dealing with it. And she'll deal with it according to how she pleases. She's inspired, she does more. She's not, she does less. The man, inspired or not, he has to do a good job. Right? Unless he's really uninspired. But you understand? So that's why the guna and karma, it's not a matter of, oh, but anybody can do anything. No, you can't. It's not a matter of that. You know, does that make sense? Someone who's not a business person cannot do business. It just is impossible. You can say we're not this body, Prabhu, and all this kind of jazz. Your business will still fail. You know? You know, just like I said, you know, the three-year-old can tell his parents as he gets into their Maserati and starts the engine, we're not this body, Prabhu. Is it going to make any difference? No. Okay, so, and that one. Okay, yes. Which is our nature? Means you study Shastra, otherwise you take the 30-second test. Yes. 30-second test is, are you married? Are you unmarried and a student, or you prefer to be in a married situation? Okay? Or you have been in a married situation, now you're not. Right? Or you're really looking forward to that bald head and two saris. Okay? Okay? Did that work on that side?
Is it really a test?
Okay, moving on to the next one. Is your expertise in somehow or another expanding on knowledge, and knowledge is the basis of how your money comes in? Or is it based on administration that is for the protection of the people? Or you know how to just straight up front generate profit? Or you know how to assist people to do one of the other three? So between these two tests, you can figure out what your varna and ashram is. It's not rocket science. People talk about it as rocket science, but that means they don't know the science. It's so straightforward, it's scary. That's why people don't know what their varna is, because they don't want to know. Otherwise, it's really easy. Right? You work for somebody, you have the occupational duties of a shudra. No ifs, no ands, no buts. That's the end of the discussion. You yourself are the one that's generating the funds by your decisions and direction. You are a vaishya. Right? You are administrating the country based on the protection of the people. You are a kshatriya. Right? Does that make sense? This is how it works. Or you may have the skills to assist these people. You have an MBA. You're assisting a businessman. So you're a business shudra. You're a bureaucrat in the government. You're a kshatriya shudra. You assist in the school, or you're a nurse or something like that in the hospital, or you're the guy that goes and looks in all the books and gets all the stuff for the lawyers. You are a Brahmin's shudra. Simple. It's so simple, people are scared to death of it. Because to them it's all about prestige. Rather, if we're not this body and it doesn't matter, then hey, this is what I am, I do it. That's for Krishna. But they want, I'm not this body means I want a more prestigious position and facility than I actually deserve. That's the whole point. It's not about actually knowing. It's just about, I want everything. Right? So I'm not this body. Right? So therefore, we're not this body, we can do whatever we want. But then if you deal with the woman according to, like you would deal with a man, oh, this is abusive. Oh, this is, So that means it's not about equality, it's about getting everything. You understand? And because the living entity in the material world is feminine, therefore, every living entity, no matter what the form of life, is trying to do that. The dog wants the whole area. It's his. Right? Only if there's another dog bigger than him, okay, then they'll split it. You know what I'm saying? So everybody's trying to lord it over the material creation to the maximum they can get. And the only limit, it's like, what do you call it? You have these euphemistic kind of sayings about, what do you call it?
The sky is the limit.
the sky's the limit. No, so your neighbors are the limit. You know, you can put your fence as far as you like until you get to the neighbor's property. Because somehow or another, they don't really see things the way you do. They don't. They somehow or another can't appreciate that we're the center of the universe. Does this make sense? Yeah. You know, so you see this everywhere. The guys that are out revolting about this and that. But the point is, if they bring down the government, then what do you have? You know what I'm saying? Look at countries where the government's brought down. How well are they doing? How much freedom is there? None. So they're not thinking. It's all about themselves. You know what I'm saying? And at the same time, as the conservatives want to do everything where it's just all in little boxes and everyone's there, but everybody's an individual. So that's the whole thing. It's only the Vedic culture can do this. So it's very simple. We have a place in the culture, and in that position we'll be comfortable. We're just used to, from the Western mentality, that there's basically never in history been anyone in a position of power or authority that didn't exploit it. And so then we're thinking that's how everybody else works. When the Vedic culture is just saying, this is how everybody can cooperate. Right? In other words, in the West, it's rare to hear of a nice king. Right? Generally, they're always part of, you know, some kind of Disney thing. Like that. Does that make sense? But in the Vedic, it's rare you hear of a bad king. Right? Let's take bad kings. Okay, who springs to mind?
Venu.
Anyone else?
Duryodhana.
Anyone else?
Jarasandha.
But actually, as far as his people and citizens, you know what I'm saying? But the mentality is bad that he has to be. Hiranyakashipu. Okay, so we're up to four. And we're talking about the last 151 trillion years. Right? But in Western history, it's rare to find a good one. I don't know. All I know is Herod wasn't so good, right? Sorry?
Kangsa.
Kangsa, okay. That's good. Five, okay, we're up to five. Do I hear six? You understand? So that's the whole thing. You have to really think to find. But it would be the opposite in the modern scenario. In the Kali Yuga, then, other than the Vedic, it would be very hard to find a good one. So then we're thinking that the Vedic culture is like how we've been. No, it's so different. It's totally different. It doesn't matter. Vidura is a Shudra. We're reading about his conversation. Like that. He's respected by the great sages, by the Lord, by, you know, the mature members of his dynasty and the others. Right? Even the demigods. So, but he's a Shudra. So that's the thing, is that you do your duties nicely, you fit in wonderfully. So the whole point is, don't worry about everybody else's duty, worry about your own duty.
Then that's
what works for you. That's your nature. Because for someone else, they wouldn't accept the easiest job. They'd look for something that's, you know, challenging and it's going to, you know, generate something very good.
Yeah. But if I don't need to think about money, then I like to study and I like to administer.
Yes, but that's in ashram.
That's ashram.
So in other words, you study and take care of your house. You know?
Yeah, but then I also need to generate money. So that's why I don't understand my own nature. It's like.
So, but you have a house. Is it just for you to live in?
No.
So who's living else in the house?
It's me and my daughters.
Okay, so you and daughters. So then we would basically have to present you as either grihastha or vanaprastha. If it's a matter of the position you're in now, then is good, right? And there is no husband, right? Then you could categorize yourself a vanaprastha. If it's a matter there is a husband, but you're not, you know, cooperating so much, then it's grihastha, just you're separated. Does that make sense? Or if there's an idea that you want to, you know, be more comfortable in the environment, then it's grihastha. significant, and then as a job, then you work for somebody. So the point is when you're in ashram, you perform the duties that function there. When you're in varna, you perform those duties. As we said, ashram is brahminical. So that someone likes to study, be religious, be clean, that's normal for the Vedic culture. Does that make sense? You know, it's only because the alternative culture is so well, so much popular, that it's considered, that's real, and what we're talking about is an alternative. Right? But the point is that the household being based around religious principles and being based on the mode of goodness, that's what it's supposed to be. Then it's what skill set you have. Do you want to be the one responsible for making the plan and executing it and thereby getting profit or not? Or do you want a guaranteed profit that someone else worries about? That's basically your decision. So therefore, if it's you want someone else to make the decision, then you work for somebody. But then you follow the rules according to that. It means you have to work nicely at the company. You have to behave properly with everybody else in the company. You have to behave properly with the boss of the company. And you have to figure out what is their mission statement. But businesses don't generally have mission statements. That's intellectuals that sit around don't have anything to do. That's important to them, right? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is then there's a mood to the company, how they present themselves. You have to represent that, and if you don't do that, that's irreligious. Then you're neither dvija nor shudra. Then you're below shudra. You understand? So shudra, that's their mood. You don't like that, then you have to work within the dvija and run the concern yourself. Does that make sense? It's very straightforward. Does that make sense? You know, but we, for prestige, we're worried about it. No, but ashram is always that. So you like to study, you like to administrate, but the point is to administer, you're not willing to take a risk in administration. Kshatriya means you're willing to take a risk. You may be on the top of the pile, you may be tossed out. That's the way administration works. Today, you're the guy running the place. Tomorrow, they have a vote. You have nothing to do here. That's the risk. Shudra means there's no risk. You understand? That's the whole point. But Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya means risk. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's simple. Is that okay? Yes. Dealt with everything? Okay. 2 minutes.
Yes.
Let's see if we can get through the chapter, right? This is happening. Sorry, that we have one sentence left and then we can't get through it. Okay, the principles of renunciation are 4. 1, to avoid illicit sex life. 2, to avoid meat eating. 3, to avoid intoxication. 4, to avoid gambling. These 4 principles are called tapasya, or austerity. To absorb the mind in the supreme, in Krishna consciousness, is the process of self-realization. Right? So then you're going to avoid these and absorb the mind in Krishna consciousness. That's what you're doing. So these 4, they're tapasya, or austerity, because no one has a duty of these. Right? These aren't duties. Right, so, therefore, to not do them. Now, the physical difficulty that comes from that, that's called penance. And the performance of the duties themselves, that's called austerity. Does that make sense? So they're just 2 sides of the same thing, because otherwise there's always a confusion of penance and austerity. Right? So these 4, out of all of them, are the ones that are the most distracting of all material activities, because they're totally unnecessary. Right? So you're taking something to the extreme, you know, means you're interested in having sex with anything, you know, at any time, any place, right? So that's a problem. There's no regulation. Meat eating, you're willing to eat anything, even to the point of killing things to eat them, right? Intoxication, then you're not functioning within reality. We're already in an illusion, and then we add illusion to that. So then that's getting really bad, right? And four, to avoid gambling, because there you're not. It's nothing. What will happen is no reality, and then whatever you do have is lost. Right, so you don't have any facility. You can't maintain your family and everything. Gamblers aren't known for being, stable in family life. You might have somebody who's known he's good, but he's generally alone. Right, and you only hear about him when he's just made some money. You don't hear about him when he doesn't have money, and the guy that he owes money to is coming along and sending his men to cut his fingers off. Right? You just don't hear about that. Does that make sense? So that's why these four are avoided. It's not that they're fanatic or this or that. That's the fun part, is because these are the most opposed to spiritual advancement. That's why in Kali Yuga, Kali Raj then, insists on working with qualified people in these four areas. If you want to make Kali Yuga work, you have to have qualified people. And qualified people are focused on these four. Right? Otherwise, how do you make Kali Yuga work? If you get rid of these four, and then people take up spiritual life, then you're living in Satya Yuga. So that means that defeats the whole purpose. Right? Does that make sense? Right. Yeah. Therefore, yeah, Adama and Havaneva.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Sarva Veta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana.